Hey, this is Will with Compass Mining. Welcome to another episode. Joined here today with Zach Bull, content director at Compass. Excited to have you on the show, Zach. How are you doing?
Yeah, excited to be here. This episode's going to be great.
So today we got Babel Finance, which does a lot of different stuff in the space. Right now, they're kind of in the middle of a vortex with financing and figuring out how to get all these Chinese Bitcoin miners to different locations. So really excited to have Yulong on, who leads procurement and direction for a lot of Bitcoin mining and financial operations over there.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you do, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on your preferred listening platform. It really helps out the show. The Compass Podcast is presented commercial free by Compass, the number one Bitcoin mining marketplace. If you want to get started mining Bitcoin, source hard to find ASICs, or find competitively priced hosting space, then check Compass out at compassmining.io. And now, on to the show.
So Yulong, can you dive into a little bit more how Babel Finance is helping with Bitcoin mining in general? Like what are the finance arms that you guys and finance products that you guys give out to miners? What does that look like? What does a typical deal look like? And what are some other operations that you guys do around Bitcoin mining, specifically in the Chinese market?
Sure. As I said earlier, so the firm was founded about 3 years ago, right? Our initial angle is to help crypto holders to tap onto additional source of liquidity other than the exchange market itself. So they have additional option by holding onto their crypto assets and borrow crypto against this pool of collateral. So and then in regards to mining operation or the miners, this is a natural need. If you look at the mining operation, on one hand, these guys are getting crypto reward as part of the operation. Right. And on the other hand, they are paying out expenses in fiat terms, and you can translate that into stable coins. So if the market turns out to be underperforming, right, during for some time, there's a natural tendency for the miners to evaluate whether they want to hold on to these assets and seek for like a bridge and loan solutions so that they can wait out until the market rebounded before they start to sell their crypto reward. So it's really a part of their operational assessment that this bridge and loan solutions is what a lot of these miners will be looking after in these situations. And the Babel Finance, the platform we build, fill in those gaps. And this is number one. This is a gap we are filling. Number two is because the location that we are having here. So Babel is located in Hong Kong, right, very close to the action scene of a lot of mining activities happens. Right? By having that geographic proximity really enable us to provide localized financial services to these miners and build a sort of face-to-face, stronger relationship tie. And that really helps us to provide those services and build a strong track record by providing this type of collateral loan services. And then as the business and also the sophistication among the miners grow, right? In addition to pure crypto-backed loan, they were starting to evaluate whether they can collect some of the mining machines with us and tap onto bridge and loan solutions. So Babel only work with the institutions. So we only have a few hundred clients. And then the average check size is among a few million dollars. And given their quality, we selectively pick a few institutional miners and did a few pilot programs by taking in their miners as a collateral. And it's a three-party project, right? It's beyond, the difficulty is beyond what a normal crypto-backed loan is. So we have to work with hosting facilities, taking the mining machines from the miners, and by having the hosting facility as a guarantor in the operation, make sure the safety and the quality of machines, they remain the same. And then we extend the credit line to the miners. So it's rather complex. So by having this sort of comprehensive suite of financial services, we enable the miners to manage their operation better.
Yeah, it's super interesting to see how you can use miners as collateral for loans to kind of fund your current operational expenditures, which of course is like key of mind for anyone running a facility, and even down to someone just running one ASIC. Like, how do you continue funding your operation, especially if you're a Bitcoin bull and you think right now it's worth taking a little pain for the betterment later? I want to kind of move into the Chinese market right now, which obviously is on the tip of everyone's tongue. A lot of Chinese miners are moving out of the region and they're looking for new areas to go to. I've talked with you guys at Babel a few times for some articles and research we've done here at Compass. And from what I've seen so far, it seems like you've helped a lot of miners who are your clients move to North American markets and elsewhere. Can you kind of dive into that? Explain to us where you guys are seeing miners move and what are the logistical hurdles that they're having to encounter and work through along with the movement?
Sure. That's a very heavily debated topic nowadays. So what you guys are seeing here is a lot of institutional miners had a great bull run of 2020, right? They are cash rich. They have a bunch of machines. And then there's a sudden policy change just happened over the past few months. As part of the portfolio management, they started to evaluate the diversification options of their hosting facilities actually towards the end of last year. But the recent policy change accelerated their options now. So if you really look at the candidates on a global basis, there are a few buckets, obviously. Right. Firstly, you'll be looking at somebody like North America, right, including Canada and the US. And then the second group will be like East Europe, North Europe. And then the last basket will be Central Asia, right? I mean, Russia to some extent, and some of these smaller places, including Southeast Asia. Right. For the first basket, North America is a top choice for miners, right? For a few reasons. Number one, the legal framework is much more established, right? So everybody will feel pretty confident by getting their assets into that territory, right? With the protection from established legal framework. So this is ultra important, right? Because the miner, the value of the miner itself, mining machines itself, is pretty significant. So people want to protect against the assets. And number two, I mean, the power situation in North America, including the power infrastructure in North America, is pretty established. Right? If you look at the power cost, it's anywhere between 3.5 to 6.5 cents. Right, it's a large range, but it's still acceptable in regards to mining operation. So I mean that's ideal. And the I think the last point being there have been a few sort of hosting facilities set up with a decent track record built in North America. So we can find decent partners. Some of this could be even listed on the stock market. So these are credit partners we can find when we're trying to move those assets over. And then quickly move on to the second basket, right? The North Europe and then the North Europe guys, including I think we have talked to Norway, of Finland, Iceland, those countries. And these places, I think they were less known for mining before, but I think they have sort of real pretty abundant natural resources. And then they value the ESG concept pretty well from the start. The drawback, I mean, if you compare this basket with the first one, is that the infrastructure or the speed to getting the infrastructure up will be slower. Right, and then there haven't been a lot of mining hosting facility partners, which you can find before, and so they can work with them. So they lack, in relatively sense, they lack some of the experiences in getting there. And then the last basket is a wild card, right? It's closer to the Asian markets, like Central Asia, Russia, and then there's a bunch of smaller hosting facilities. Who has been around for years. And then the mining cost varies from like 1 cent to 4 cents. So it's lower than the US. And the construction cost to getting the facilities there will be lower as well. But I mean, with all these benefits, everybody would not be able to overcome one of the biggest hurdle here, which is a legal framework, right? Either it's a political system or it's a legal framework. It's less resilient than North America for sure. So, if everybody has to think about they want to move tens of millions of machines over there without getting proper protection on the assets, And then that's a huge uncertainty people have to deal with. So at this moment, people have high tendencies to move. The first choice will always be North America, right? And there's one point I was missing in the early discussion is that tax situation. So US actually has up to 25% tax penalty for this kind of imports. And if you compare that in Canada, which I believe is 5% or significantly less than what the US market is charging. So in between Canada and US for North America, so people would prefer to get it to Canada over US. So it's rather complex situation, but hopefully that gives you a bit more overview of the situation.
Yeah, that's super helpful. I just wanted to jump in here with maybe a little bit of an extension on all of that, sort of the landscape of what these Chinese miners are facing right now. There's a high level of information asymmetry between Western miners and Eastern miners, usually, and just Western crypto audiences and Eastern crypto audiences. Would you say that the situation in China for some of these miners in terms of trying to figure out where they're going to move their machines or if they're just going to put them in storage and the timelines they're looking at in order to get all this done and the hosting rates they're trying to find outside of China, like, is their situation as chaotic and crazy as it seems or even worse or not as much? Like, what is the reality there for maybe your average Chinese mining farm trying to relocate compared to what it seems like on social media or in the news?
Right. I agree. There's a lot of noise is going around. So in our views, I would like to make a following comments. So the conclusion here is no, right? As simple as that. And then I already saw some of the comments here. Number one, ever since 2019, 2018, the mining market is becoming much, much more institutionalized, right? The smaller miners, there are very few smaller miners existing in the markets, right? In any meaningful sense, especially for Bitcoin mining. So if you look at our clientele, so on average, I think we will be dealing with clients with at least 200 to 400 parahash each, right? So that by having this size, and a lot of those miners actually operate over 1,000 parahash each. So if you operate at those sizes, it will mean a few things. So you are basically have abundant resources. And then since there's a fabulous round for 2020, given the sizes, all of these clients or miners here in North Asia, they have a lot of resources, right? It's a pretty profitable business for them. So they accumulated enough resources to getting over a prolonged duration of this uncertainty, right? So they have enough cash to handle that. So by having that scenario, right, they are not worried to the extent they are desperate, right? It's definitely not that case. So that's number one, right? And number two, if you look at overseas capacity, the general assessment is that given how big the hash rate was in North Asia, right, there's no way that the entirety of that hash rate or a significant portion of that hash rate will be able to find a home elsewhere, like in any other jurisdictions in the next few months. So everybody, I mean, the general assessment here is that maybe up to 5 or 10% of that hash rate in North Asia will be able to find a home in the next 4 quarters. So the existing capacity will only be able to take, right, very few of that hash rate. And then there's a bunker of hash rate facilities getting up online in the next 6 months before winter camp. And then the second batch of hash rate will only be able to get online in the springtime next year. So that's the pace of migration, so-called hash rate migration, people are getting. Will you ask the third question? What could you remind me on that?
Yeah, just to jump back in there. We're also particularly interested in learning about what small miners in China will be doing. I think whether it be other coins, and they just don't have to have as intensive industrial setups as Bitcoin mining, or even just smaller Bitcoin mining setups where they're in medium to small size warehouses or home mining, whatnot. to kind of get away from the Chinese ban. What do you think about that?
Sure. I think the last point is about, if the miners are not able to find a home elsewhere, what are they doing with the rest of their mining machines, right? So they are putting, as we speak, they are putting them into storage, right? A lot of them just putting up to storage. And then there's a portion of so incumbent miners who have significant size. They procure enough future contract from the manufacturer, right, for additional miners. These guys, given the situation, given the recent uncertainty, increasing uncertainty, they start to divest some of their investment, right? But it's not the case is that the internet may be positioning, right? It's not a desperate sell, right? They just evaluate sort of logical options, try to divest some of the investment. And for smaller miners, I think they have a stronger tendency to divest, right? Because it's not their core business anyway, right? So for smaller miners, a lot of them just doing it on the side, right? It's a side investment. And if the difficulty of running that side investment is getting increasingly more difficult, right? So they have a natural tendency to divest that. So you see a lot of smaller miners try to sell those machines. And then for altcoin miners, it's a different situation. It doesn't require, for a lot of these altcoin miners, they are not very sensitive to electricity price to start with. And then so they were putting in the location of those altcoin miners is anywhere, right? It could be from the IDC or it could be from a factory setup, right? It's like put into a private data center of a factory. Or if you can just mine in your home, right, with a small operation. So these guys can mine with a lot more flexibility and not less impacted by the recent policy change of closing down the big hosting sites. So I think that's what we have observed on the markets.
Awesome. Yeah, that's, I think, a really good recap of the situation in the space and some insight for a lot of people who are not in the area right now. I want to turn to the hardware market, if you're comfortable with that, and kind of talking about the situation on the ground. We've seen that Bitmain, there's been some reports about them kind of changing up their selling strategy. I think that it was a little overhyped in the media. But of course, we know that there's a lot of machines on secondary markets right now. The issue is more hosting facilities than it is about hardware itself. So from your perspective, what does the hardware market look like? Are prices a lot cheaper over there per terahash than they are in other parts of the world? And how do you expect that market to move going forward into the second half of the year?
I think you made a correct observation. Right? The pricing for secondary miner has dropped quite a bit. Right. So in a way, it's super attractive window to enter the mining scene if you are able to find some hosting facilities. Right. So how do we evaluate the deal normally is you look at a static payback period, right, for the miners, right? Given the current hash rate, which has dropped about 40% since the peak. And then the static payback period for Bitcoin miner, the latest model, right, will be less than 200 days. To be honest, it's as low as 150 days, 280 days, right? It's a very jumping around. But so if you look at before the crash, the payback period was over 450 days. And you can see all these institutional miners from the listed companies, Riot, etc., right? They're heavily getting involved, right? With those type of peer payback, now it's essentially halved, right? So it becomes even better. Now it's a perfect time. So that's a conclusion, right? And then for this secondary markets, you can break it down into two parts. There's a second hand machines, and a lot of those supply of secondary markets are actually new miners. So for that, I have to recap for some of the sales policy of Bitmain and MicroBT, which are major supply of the miners, right? So since the start of this year, they changed the sales policy, and they only give the supply, right, to larger miners and force them to sign, also encourage them to sign a long-term contract, right? So in a way, it used to be the case, this manufacturer will release machines in batches, right, by quarters and months, and everybody will start to bid for those mining machines. And now the situation changed so they will start the future contract, and then each contract will allow or will require a buyer to commit in buying those machines, every buying a fixed amount of machines for a consecutive months going forward, right? So it's regardless of the pricing of the secondary BTC price movement, you are committed to buy. So that actually, in a way, try to prevent a lot of retail investors to buy from the sale, from the primary markets of the manufacturer, from the manufacturer, right? So so a lot of institutional miners were locked in for the longer term procurement contract. And now half a year goes by, right? And the situation changed a bit. And the people are still locked in up on this long-term contract. And they, when they evaluate the capacity, right, hosting capacity they could potentially get in the next few quarters, is definitely less than they initially planned at before the before this policy hit. So they start to divest some of the new machines. And that's where you can see this, given this a relatively large, right, on the retail markets, people may see there's thousands, like tens of thousands of machines coming out, right? But I mean, honestly, if you look at the entire manufacturing capacity of the year, it's not a significant portion. So people are divesting part of their procurement contract. That has helped push the price down a little bit. So now, Bobby has been talking to both the Asian miners as Western investors, where we did help to sort of match some of the trades, right? To on one hand, we're helping our clients to divest their portfolios, right? Manage the liquidity problem a little bit better. On the other hand, we are helping the Western miners to get a fair deal, right? To evaluate this situation more smart, a little bit more smart. So so we are seeing a lot of those supply getting sort of taken out, right? Pretty fast. And I think the pricing point for the miners have stabilized over the last 2 or 3 weeks. So now, especially given the market actually has a seems to have find a support somewhere. So the overall market has stabilized. But there is in the next 2 months, I think you will see a decent number of supply of the newer version of the miners getting into the market. And I think I encourage whoever is interested and have the capacity to host miners to evaluate this deal. Because at a pricing point, payback period, it looks very promising.
So I'm curious on that note, as these new machines are hitting the market soon, and as all these miners are sort of trying to negotiate the contracts they're still stuck in and find new hosting space, like the question everyone sort of wants the answer to is, how long will it take for the network's hash rate to recover? Like, are we going to see a decent recovery within 3 months, or will it take over a year? Or like, if you had to guess, like based on the constraints with available hosting space and all of the machines now that are flooded the market trying to find new space, how long do you think it'll be until hash rate fully recovers and starts growing again?
It's a hard assessment, right? So I think there's about 50. So now we're at the juncture of which we may see a lot more clarity in the next few weeks. The reason being, July 1st is the party's celebration anniversary, 100-year anniversary. A lot of policy has stopped. Essentially, policymakers cease to make new policies, right? That's why there's a window, this gap window that nobody will know what's going to happen. But I think the general assessment is that in the next few weeks, there will be a little bit more clarity on how the mining situation in China will evolve. And our assessment is there's a 50% chance that certain level of mining activity will remain, will be allowed to operate here. And then and at the same time, in the next few months, I know a lot of Chinese miners are evaluating sites overseas. We will see some of the capacity up and running before November. So if you combine those two, our guess is the hash rate will get back to maybe 130-140 E before winter, right? And you will stay there for a while, right? Because during winter time, there will be peak season to low season transition as well. So you stay there for a while, and then until the springtime of next year, you'll see that recover to the peak that we have seen, which is 160-ish, and then we will grow from there. And then the growth from summer next year will be pretty fast, I think. By then, all the dust will settle, right? And overseas hosting facility will be much more experienced, and then we can scale those facilities fast, and then we can see the growth of hash rate coming back again.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that is the question on everyone's mind right now. What does hash rate do over the coming year as miners are trying to like financially plan around their OPEX and for Chinese miners, their CAPEX? So I want to move to the close of our conversation here and kind of talk more about Babel in this financial situation right now. I know that you guys are helping to move miners and that you guys have some clientele. And as much as you are comfortable getting into that topic, I'd be interested to know, what does it look like for a financial firm that is in the mining space to help out miners who are leaving China right now and going to distant shores? Are you guys planning on expanding operations stateside? Are you planning on moving some of your financial capabilities to different countries and getting licenses so you can help out miners? Because I think there's this whole financial backbone and industry around mining or financial ask derivatives for mining, and no one really knows about it. So I'd be interested to see what Babel is doing to help miners financially right now.
Sure. Thank you for getting into that topic. So we our goal here is not only becoming China focused, right? We want to be a global financial infrastructure for crypto holders. And then we, given our rapid growth, we are applying for licenses globally from Hong Kong, Singapore, US, Europe. So in a way, try to increase our credibilities and get ready to establish a partnership with the Western firms, right? We have been major counterparty with a lot of household names. It's because our nature of our institutional focus, that's why we don't get a lot of retail publicity, right? That's a strategic decision. But with the recent policy change, I think we will try to get a little bit more brand awareness among Western community, right? By getting on, by thank you, Compass, for getting us this chance, right? So when we look at the situation, I think it's a natural extension of our strategy, right? We want to help our clients to thrive amid this uncertainty. So we used to provide lending services as management service. Now they need to make strategic decisions of moving hard assets offshore, and how we are trying to help them follows into the following steps. Number one, we're providing advisory services, right? Given our backgrounds, we are a little bit more closer to Western markets. My background is a banker, right? So I used to work for financial firms, evaluate projects. So we are plugged into the network from both the crypto side as well as traditional market side, right? So we identify a lot more potential candidates, right? Talking to listed companies, private companies about potential collaborations to evaluate which jurisdiction will be ideal, and in that jurisdiction, which site, right, which project will be promising. So once we have this list, we will make some material primers and try to send this to our clients, and then we'll jointly evaluate whether they are interested in investing, right, or moving their assets over. Okay, so that's step one. Now we have a few candidates. So Babel will help negotiate a deal, and then I think we don't have the final form yet, but I think we will likely set up a new business arm. It's very similar to what Genesis did with Foundry, right? Essentially help the miners to potentially invest into a greenfield project like a hosting site. And Babel will provide financing, and we will even invest some of our principal cash so that we will be fully aligned in interest with our clients. Right. And then we will syndicate this investment with a few of our clients, and we'll self-fund it, right, this by building up this site, and we'll fill in machines of ourselves or through our network of our clients. And so, and then we can get a few of this sites up and running. And then by having those facilities, you will in return enable us to firstly strengthen our relation with miners, right, with our existing clients or potentially with the Western clients. And then we can provide a little bit more financial services because we not only have the robust risk management system from crypto side, now we have actual hosting facilities that's run and owned by us. And then we can provide a little bit more. So as simple as miner, so equipment financing. We can even do REITs. We can repackage this return stream, right, into a financial product and resell it to a traditional market through our financial expertise. So we can do a little bit more here. So, but I mean, we are at a stage where of step one, right? We are evaluating sites, but I think we are getting close to step two. We have a few options now. We are just thinking how much involvement, how much cash upfront we need to pay or invest, right? And how, I mean, where we are, the those locations, who are the first tier of clients we want to group together for our syndicates. So it's fast evolving, right? Sorry, it doesn't have a lot of details, but I want to give you how we think through this process, how we help our clients along the way.
No, for sure. That was actually super helpful and insightful. Yulong, I want to thank you so much for coming onto the Compass podcast today. I think that the opportunity for retail miners who are, make up a large percentage of our clientele, and the fact that they get to hear just from an industry insider such as yourself is huge. So I want to thank you for coming on and giving us your expertise today.
Thank you. Thank you, Compass team, for inviting us. So we are happy to be connected with anybody who is in the mining thing from any countries, right? Either be interested in our services or interest, we have some resources in hosting facilities. We are open to getting in contact and explore further.
Be sure to check out Babel Finance on Twitter. You can also go to their website for further information if those services are interesting to you. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to Mining Memo, our weekly newsletter, and follow along for other podcasts going forward. Have a great one. Thanks.
That's a wrap for us at the Compass Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe and consider leaving us a 5-star review on your preferred listening platform. Thanks again, everyone. The thoughts and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Compass Podcast are their own and do not represent the opinions of Compass Mining, Inc. None of this content should be considered financial advice.